What's the difference between UVA and UVB sunlight, and how should you choose between an SPF of 15 and an SPF of 100 when you're buying a sunscreen? The Federal Drug Administration recently released some new rules which may help clear up some of the confusion, but it remains a fairly complicated subject and a perfect one for today's first week of summer edition of Please Explain. Joining us now is Dr. Michelle Hanjani, Assistant Professor of Clinical Dermatology with the Herbert Irving Center for Dermatology and Skin Cancer at Columbia University Medical Center. And I'm very pleased to welcome you to our show and to invite our listeners to give us a call at 646-829-3985 if you have any questions, or you can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. So let's get right down to it. How does sunlight actually cause our skin to burn? Is it like radiation burn?
Well, ultraviolet light actually is also known as ultraviolet radiation. So radiation and ultraviolet light are actually synonymous. But when we think of radiation, we think of ionizing radiation, something that ionizes an atom. Ultraviolet light isn't that powerful, has lower energy. So when it's absorbed by the skin, it's not ionizing atoms, but it's absorbed by the molecules in the skin. And if too much is absorbed, it damages the cells and you get a sunburn.
Well, is this any different from a burn from a fire or a hot object?
Well, a burn from a fire would be excessive heat, and that heat denatures the molecules in our skin. So ultraviolet light would be doing something similar in that the molecules are absorbing the energy that's in the ultraviolet light, and when enough energy is absorbed, heat's produced.
Well, as I understand it, the outer layer of our skin is composed of dead cells, so why should that even matter?
Well, the most superficial layer of our skin is dead cells, or keratinocytes, but immediately below that superficial layer is the basal cell layer, and those are actually living cells, and they repopulate the most superficial layer of the skin.
And that's where the damage is caused.
Well, the damage is caused to both the dead cells, to this basal layer, and also some ultraviolet light even penetrates more deeply into the dermis of the skin, and that damages elastic tissue, collagen, cells found within that middle layer of the skin.
Can you help us understand UVA and UVB light? What do the letters stand for, and what's the difference between these two different kinds of sunlight?
Sure. So ultraviolet light is kind of arbitrarily divided between UVA, UVB, and in fact UVC. And these three different types of light have different amounts of energy. And so light is transmitted in waves, and they have wavelengths. And so the longer wavelength is UVA, and middle wavelength is UVB, and the small wavelength is UVC.
And UVA penetrates the skin more deeply because it has a longer wavelength?
It does. So because it has a longer wavelength, it's slightly lower energy, it's less likely to be absorbed by the most superficial layer of the skin or reflected, so it penetrates into the dermis, the middle layer.
Well, you can have a burn as a result of not being exposed to the sun, but for some people, exposure to the sun over a long period causes skin cancer. Is this related?
So the sunburn reaction is a little bit different from the chronic damage that occurs from ultraviolet light. So when you have a sunburn, enough energy is absorbed that it actually does immediate damage to the cells and the molecules in the skin. But chronic damage results from damage to the DNA within the cells that make up the skin. So if DNA damage occurs, then those cells start to divide in an abnormal way. And sometimes they divide in an abnormal way that they just die. But sometimes there's damage that occurs to genes that cause the cells to grow uncontrolled, and that's the definition of a cancer.
And we wind up with melanoma usually. Is that the cancer that comes from this kind of exposure?
Well, that's the most serious type. So the most common type is basal cell carcinoma, followed by squamous cell carcinoma, and then much more life-threatening, obviously, is melanoma. It's the least common.
If we're left with no protection, how long does it take for skin to become damaged in the summer sun in this area?
Well, everybody's different. We categorize patients based on their skin phototype. So we talk about types 1 through 6. So type 1 skin would be someone who's extremely fair, has freckles, red or very blonde hair. All the way down the road would be type 6 skin, and that would be someone with extremely dark skin, dark hair, dark eyes. And so different people have intrinsic SPF or natural sun protection. So it's going to be different based on your skin type.
So people who have dark complexions are more protected from the sun?
Yeah, the pigment within their skin and their hair and their eyes absorbs ultraviolet light, so provides some SPF and also protection against ultraviolet A. So they're less likely to burn in the same amount of time that it would take someone who has very fair skin to burn. Also, the time of day is different in terms of how long it takes you to burn, because different amounts of ultraviolet light reach the earth depending on the time of day and the time of year and the part of the world.
The angle that it's actually coming in?
Exactly.
So when's the most dangerous time? In August?
So in the summer months, in Manhattan, in the summer months, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. would be the most damaging.
Dr. Michelle Hanjani is my guest. She's assistant professor of clinical dermatology with the Herbert Irving Center for Dermatology and Skin Cancer at Columbia University's Medical Center. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And we invite you to give us a call at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a question or a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. I understand that sunscreens work in two basic ways. Some provide a physical block that keeps the skin from absorbing sunlight, and some provide chemical protection. Can you explain the differences between the two approaches?
First, I guess
the physical blocks. How do they work?
So physical blockers provide a physical barrier on the skin, so that ultraviolet light that reaches the physical barrier is reflected off, so it's not absorbed.
Whether it's UVA, UVB, or UVC?
Exactly. Well, UVC really doesn't reach the earth in any appreciable amount because of the ozone layer. But UVA, predominantly UVA and UVB, depending on the type of sunscreen you have. But physical barriers generally block all ultraviolet light, as opposed to chemical agents, chemical blockers, which may block varying degrees of UVA and or UVB or vice versa.
Well, you brought some samples here, and I'm holding one that's called Solbar's Zinc. Should I assume that this is zinc oxide and this would be a physical blocker?
Well, if you look in the ingredients, you'd be able to see if it contains only zinc oxide, because most sunscreen nowadays contain a combination of a physical blocker and a chemical blocker. Some sunscreens are pure physical blockers, or just zinc or titanium dioxide or both. So I can't really say what this product contains.
Well, it says broad-spectrum UVB, UVA sunscreen, but I like this. It says non-comedogenic. Does that mean that it doesn't make you laugh?
Oh, it means comedogenic, as in comedones, which are the basic acne lesion. So it's telling the consumer that's not going to cause acne.
The FDA very recently released new guidelines for sunscreens, which may go a long way to helping to make sunscreens more protective and the level of protection clearer for consumers. Can you talk about the new FDA rules?
Sure. The new FDA rules are very important, because the FDA is now telling companies that they have to label the package so that it clearly tells the consumer how much it blocks both UVA and UVB light, because UVA is 95% of the light that reaches the Earth's surface, and UVB is only 5%. And SPF only refers to protection against UVB.
And what does SPF mean?
So SPF stands for sun protection factor. And in a study setting, it tells you how long a person can stay under an ultraviolet B lamp and not burn. So how many times longer than if they were just without sunscreen. So SPF 15 is 15 times as long.
As SPF 100, is that even possible, SPF 100?
So the increase in SPF is actually negligible, because an SPF of 15 provides about 93% protection from UVB. SPF 30 is about 97%. SPF of 50, 98%. So you can see if you get to 100, it's plateaued. So a patient who's choosing SPF 100 needs to understand that that's not providing 100% coverage. That's just blocking most of UVB.
But it sounds to me like 15 is probably very effective for most people.
Well,
and a lot less expensive.
On the study conditions, they are using a lot more sunscreen than we actually use. So with typical use, most patients use anywhere from 25 to 75% of the amount of sunscreen that's used in the SPF study. So if you're only using, let's say, 50% of the amount that was used in the study, then and you choose an SPF of 15, you're only getting an SPF of 7.5. So you need to apply, the typical adult needs to apply 2 tablespoons of sunscreen all over their body Every 2 hours.
Every 2 hours?
Yeah, every 2 hours to have the SPF, the true SPF that's stated on the box.
Now, that's not for everyday activities, is it? That's when we go to the beach?
Well, any exposed skin should have sunscreen. So any exposed skin, so your face, your hands, and the V of the neck.
All four seasons?
Well, in the winter months, it's not really as relevant because much less ultraviolet light reaches the earth in New York in the winter months. So, but we usually recommend year-round protection at least for the face and aftershave cream or in moisturizer, just so you're in the habit. And then certainly in the spring, summer, and fall, because even an overcast day in the spring may have about 50% of the ultraviolet light of a regular day. So you can still burn.
Listeners have been writing in. Estelle from Austin asks, do the various chemicals in sunscreen affect vitamin D synthesis?
So there have been studies, because this is a logical concern, because ultraviolet light B is involved in the synthesis of vitamin D. So if you block ultraviolet B, if you have like an SPF of 50, are you making enough vitamin D? So the studies show that in patients who are sun protecting and then those who are not, that there is a slight decrease in their vitamin D level, but it's not significant. So the American Academy of Dermatology recommends that you continue to wear sunscreen and that you supplement with vitamin D.
Alan says there is a debate about whether sunscreens containing vitamin A assist in causing cancer. What do you think?
This caller is referring to retinyl palmitate, which is an ingredient in many cosmetics and many creams. So retinyl palmitate is actually a naturally occurring form of vitamin A within the human body. So there was a study that showed that in mice that were genetically engineered to be excessively sensitive to ultraviolet light and form cancers, even without something that was mutagenic, that they would have skin cancers. And if you put retinyl palmitate on them, the study suggested that perhaps they had more skin cancer, but they even developed skin cancer to ultraviolet light even if they didn't have retinyl palmitate on them.
Because there are other things where some people have more of a tendency to develop cancer than others.
Exactly.
There is a genetic component, isn't there?
Yeah. So these mice were genetically engineered to be more susceptible to ultraviolet light. So it's not really relevant to humans. So retinyl palmitate is considered safe, and it's been studied by the appropriate government regulatory agencies and still on the market.
Another caller or listener, Stephanie, actually asked this on Facebook. What about the chemicals in sunscreen? Is there a point where too much is a bad thing?
So this is an issue that's been of concern for years. And again, the government regulatory agencies have been studying ingredients not only in sunscreens but in other cosmetics and creams and various agents to determine if they're absorbed into the body, if these have long-term carcinogenic effects or other effects. And the most interesting being oxybenzone, which is a chemical blocker. We know that if someone uses enough oxybenzone that it's absorbed into the body and it's excreted in the urine. So the concern was, does oxybenzone have impacts on our hormones? Because it seems to, you know, chemically it seems to have some impact on hormones in animals. So they study this in humans, and it seems that if individuals apply oxybenzone sunscreen on their whole body every day, that if you check their hormone levels over successive days, that it doesn't seem to impact their hormone levels. But the appropriate...
It sounds like something I'd rather stay away from.
Well, you know, these have all been studied by the FDA and the associated agencies, and they seem to be safe. But if you want to be 100% and you don't want to take any chance, then probably a physical blocker is the way to go.
Oh. Somebody is asking about sunscreen's application being followed by a heat rash after a day's use in hot weather. Is that normal?
So there's a couple of different types of rashes you can get from sunscreen. Some people get heat rash or prickly heat. We call that miliaria rubrum. That's the technical word. And if you occlude the skin with anything so that when you're sweating outside, the sweat isn't able to leave your skin, you can get heat rash. And it's very itchy and unpleasant. So that can happen with any sunscreen, but certain sunscreens actually cause photoallergy, meaning the active ingredient of the sunscreen, when exposed to sunlight in the right individual, can cause almost like a poison ivy rash.
But we only find out after we have the reaction.
Exactly.
What were we doing to ourselves when we slathered our skin with baby oil in the 1950s and 60s? Did that make our skin bake more swiftly?
Well, some oils do seem to allow a person to get more of a it seemed to cause more of a sunburn reaction. And so there are certain oils that seem to do that. But some oils actually block the sun. So you have, it's almost like a sunscreen. So you don't have a sunburn reaction, but then you tan more. So it depends on the oil.
And baby oils will do that?
Well, baby oil seems to increase your sunburn response. Mm. There was a study years ago that looked at this.
What about clothing? To what extent does our clothing function as a sunscreen?
Depending on the weave of the clothing and the type of material, you do get a very good sun protection from certain types of clothing. So the tighter the weave, the thicker the material, and they call that UPF, ultraviolet protection factor. And if you wash clothes, like if you have a cotton T-shirt and you wash it, it becomes even tighter weave and it provides more ultraviolet light protection, and that's constant, so you don't have to reapply sunscreen to those areas. And you can actually buy sun protective clothing that have a stated UPF that's been tested of UPF 70 or UPF 100, and that's UVA and UVB.
What would you do? You recommend an SPF? You gave us a range, but which one would you use?
I usually say use at least an SPF of 30 and make sure that it's a broad spectrum sunscreen. So that's the issue that the FDA is now telling companies that they need to say broad spectrum SPF and then the number. So if it's broad spectrum SPF of 15, instead of just saying that that's UVB, that actually tells you that it's also UVA. It's a sufficient protection against UVA. So that's how the new packaging will be. So right now, if you buy sunscreen that says broad spectrum SPF of 15, you don't know if it's covering UVA.
Has the pharmaceutical industry been okay with this, or have they fought it?
Quite a bit of arguing and discussion about this, because the reason that sunscreen doesn't have a stated UVA protection is that it was hard to determine what the appropriate test for that would be. So with UVB, there was a test that's been used for decades that's established. So different pharmaceutical companies and have used their own testing for UVA so that they can say it protects you. And so there was a question as to which test was the most accurate, which one should the FDA use, and certain tests made certain companies look better than other companies. So that's why it's taken this long for us to have this new packaging.
My guest is Dr. Michelle Hanjani, Assistant Professor of Clinical Dermatology with the Herbert Irving Center for Dermatology and Skin Cancer at the Columbia University Medical Center. We will take a little break and come back with your calls and more comments. Our phone number is 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org. And we are back with Dr. Michelle Hanjani, Assistant Professor of Clinical Dermatology at the Herbert Irving Center for Dermatology and Skin Cancer at Columbia University Medical Center. And we are taking your calls at 646-829-3985. And before we get to the calls, just one other thing. Has climate change had an impact on all of this? Is the sun cutting through our atmosphere more powerfully now than it did in the past?
In fact, it is. As the ozone layer has been depleted and other changes in the atmosphere, it does seem that there's more ultraviolet light reaching the Earth, specifically ultraviolet B, which only made up about 5% of the light reaching the Earth, has increased. And there has been also an increase in the incidence of skin cancer over the same period of time. But it seems that that increase is more related to behavioral issues, like going into the sun more, rather than environmental causes.
Despite the fact that we've been warned to wear sunscreen?
Yes, because in fact, sunscreens seem to cause a false sense of security. So individuals will go into the sun, they'll apply sunscreen, and they'll even perhaps reapply sunscreen. But if you're in the sun and you're wearing your sunscreen, you're still getting ultraviolet light exposure. You have to be in the shade, you have to wear a hat, you have to wear sun protective clothing, and avoid the sun between 10 and 2.
Sandra from Manhattan asks, are tanning salons dangerous? And are they regulated?
So tanning salons are regulated in a state-to-state manner. So there are certain states that that you can only tan a certain number of times per week. You can only tan if you're above a certain age, or you need parental consent if you're a teenager. But it's different based on the state. And the Academy of Dermatology does feel that tanning salons are dangerous.
Now, John Boehner has been teased many times for the color of his skin, which looks kind of orange. Would that have just be a natural color in some people?
Some people do have more of an orange hue to their skin. Sometimes it's genetic, sometimes it's diet-related, sometimes it's self-tanner. So there are a variety of reasons.
Well, maybe being a powerful figure in Washington.
Possibly.
Our first caller is Jan from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
All right. By the way, baby oil, it's mineral oil, and maybe people want to check it out more. And my question is this. I like to stand and look up in the sun with my eyes closed, and it feels really good with my eyes. Is this safe? How long can I stand and look up in the sun like this?
In other words, do our eyelids protect us from the rays of the sun?
Well, most of the ultraviolet light should be absorbed by the skin and the eyelids before it reaches your eyes. But the eyes are very sensitive to ultraviolet light. It increases your risk of cataracts. Certainly, ultraviolet light to the skin of the eyelid increases skin cancer in that area, and that's also very hard to treat. So we recommend wearing ultraviolet-protected sunglasses.
And are some sunglasses better than others?
Well, certain sunglasses do have UV filters, so that would be better than just a basic sunglass.
But the things that you see being sold on the street that look nice because they have nice frames but only cost a couple of dollars, they're probably not the best sunglasses.
Probably not the best, but they probably provide some ultraviolet protection, but probably not as much as UV-filtered sunglasses.
Barbara from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air. Barbara, I think you have your radio on, and so you're not hearing us live. I'm going to put you on hold and go to another call, but you should probably go to the telephone and listen, and I'll come back to you. Okay. Who is this from New Jersey? Goalie?
Yes.
Hi, Goalie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I always use olive oil, and I don't burn, and I tan very nicely. My kids make fun of me. They think I'm frying myself, but I would like to have her opinion on that.
Well, it's not necessary.
Is it an extra virgin?
Well, if it smells too much if I have extra virgin. But I can use some lettuce on it. Yes.
I prefer to suntan with balsamic myself.
Okay.
Well, certain oils will protect your skin almost like a sunscreen and prevent you from burning. But it's not necessary to burn to cause damage to the DNA in the cells in the skin to increase your risk of skin cancer. So any tanning that you're doing is causing damage to the skin.
So you don't have to burn. You just tanning is already an indication that you may be damaging your own skin.
Exactly. It's not necessary to burn to be causing changes that can increase your risk of skin cancer and photoaging.
And we won't know until we either die without skin cancer or suddenly come up with a skin cancer.
Exactly. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, some people are more genetically predisposed to skin cancer and will have a much lower threshold for ultraviolet exposure.
And that's because of the amount of melanin in our cells?
In some individuals, it's because of the amount of melanin, because melanin absorbs ultraviolet light, so someone with more melanin will have slightly darker skin. And in some cases, it suggests because individuals may have certain genetic mutations that it doesn't take as much ultraviolet light for their cells to grow uncontrolled.
Well, I've been told that when they operate for melanoma, they can spot the cancer cells because they're very dark.
Not necessarily. So when you do an excision of a melanoma, you can't really see the cancer cells below the skin. On the surface of the skin, most melanomas are brown or various shades of brown, but not always.
Let's try Barbara from Manhattan again. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering about lipstick. Does that offer any protection, sun protection to the lips? Because one doesn't want to put sunblock on one's lips and eat it.
So lipstick will have some sun protection, and there are certain lipsticks that have a stated SPF. It's most likely not going to be as strong as a sunscreen, but there are certain lip balms and lip products that provide sun protection, then you can easily put your lipstick on top.
Uh-huh. And about what percentage of melanomas are caused by sun? Is there a known percentage are caused by sun exposure?
Well, I'm not sure that there's really a known percentage because it's hard to track. You have to, when someone has a melanoma, you then have to look retrospectively at what their triggers would have been. But we do know that the incidence of melanoma has gone up 45% between 1992 and 2004. And we believe that that's strongly correlated with sun exposure, increasing sun exposure in that population.
A number of people have asked about what you do with children. Aaron from Queens asks, do you have any special recommendations for precautions to take with babies? What's the evidence about early sun exposure and lifetime skin cancer rates?
Well, babies under the age of 6 months don't have the ability to regulate their temperature and don't have as good natural protections against ultraviolet light. So babies under 6 months should be sun protected by being kept in the shade, being kept out of the sun, hats and sun protective clothing and shields. Children over the age of 6 months, we usually recommend they use physical blockers, not chemical blockers. So zinc oxide, titanium dioxide. In terms of skin cancer risk and sun damage, so early sun exposure in children and in babies is associated with an increased number of moles in the skin. And that's usually used as a surrogate marker for increased risk of melanoma, because the more moles you have, usually the higher your risk of melanoma. So the more sun exposure a child gets, the more moles they have and the higher their risk of melanoma.
Mike asks, there's a French sunscreen that claims a third kind of UV between A and B, and they say they're alone in protecting against it. Is that true?
Not really. So that's a chemical blocker. It's a chemical. So chemical blockers aren't usually as broad spectrum, at least the ones that are FDA approved in the United States. They aren't as broad spectrum typically as physical blockers, but they're more cosmetically appealing because physical blockers tend to be more opaque and white. So this French ingredient blocks a part of ultraviolet A and a part of a little bit of ultraviolet B that most chemical blockers tend to miss.
And you can't get it in the United States. Is there a reason?
So you can actually get, a few years ago it was FDA approved. There are a few different types, but one type of this French ingredient was FDA approved.
We go now to Sheila from New York City. Hi, Sheila. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I am wondering about laser hair removal. Is the laser light safe, or does that lead to cancer? I'm just wondering about that because I'm going through the procedure right now. I'm a little worried about it.
Well, laser does seem to be safe if done correctly. It doesn't seem to increase your cancer risk, unless, of course, they're using too much energy and you're receiving burns. But if it's done correctly, it should be safe. It's FDA approved as safe and effective.
Now, what about the sun's effect on hair? It does dry it out. It can make it brittle. Is it causing any damage?
So it is. So our hair is not made up of living cells. It's made up of dead cells. And those dead cells contain proteins and lipids just like other cells on our body, even though they're not living and dividing. They're only living and dividing within the hair follicle. So when we go to the beach and we spend the whole day there wearing sunscreen, we're sitting in the shade during the peak hours, any ultraviolet light your hair shaft absorbs causes damage, and it becomes dry and brittle. The color may fade. And you have to wait for new hair to grow in for those changes to reverse.
ST says titanium dioxide and zinc oxide seem to produce a white powdery finish. How does a person with dark skin wear either of these? I usually use a sunscreen with avobenzin, but I'd like to use one with either of these other ingredients. And what's causing that powdery look anyway?
Well, zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are white particles, and so they're actually used, titanium dioxide is actually used to whiten objects and creams. It's used as a whitening agent, and zinc oxide is also a white product. So what they've done recently is they've micronized it, made it very small, so it goes on less white. But even still, darker-complected individuals may notice a subtle white hue. Avobenzone is a chemical blocker, not a physical blocker, and it blocks a part of UVA that's hard to block by chemical blockers.
A couple of listeners have asked about whether spray sunscreen is effective.
So that's a little unclear. The FDA is currently determining a way to study how effective spray sunscreens are. So the ingredients within a spray sunscreen may, under circumstances where they're in a cream, provide a certain SPF. But when they're in a spray, it's hard to get consistency with the application.
Let's go to another call. Paul from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, what I wanted to ask was, if when my sunscreen gets old, does it lose its potency? Do I have to get it new every year or every couple of years?
Well, sunscreen has an expiration date. So once you reach the expiration date, the reason they choose that date is after a certain amount of time, the active ingredients are thought to degrade and not provide the full SPF. So to have the full SPF, you should use them by their expiration date.
Okay, thank you. Another listener asks, if you have the condition vitiligo, what's the best way to protect one's skin from UV rays?
I'm guessing the listener is saying vitiligo.
Vitiligo, yeah. That's me misreading it.
Okay, so vitiligo is a condition where the immune system, it's an autoimmune disease, and the immune system is attacking melanocytes and destroying the pigment-producing cells in the skin, and so you have patches of skin that are white. So those areas don't have any natural protection from ultraviolet light as the normal pigmented skin. And so those areas should be sun protected. And I would use a physical blocker like zinc or titanium dioxide.
A number of people have called in. We have very little time. They've called in about the application for people of color. Do the same rules apply?
Yes. So people of color do have some natural SPF, but it's not a very powerful SPF. It's certainly more than, depending on your skin pigment, it could be an SPF of 8, it could be more, it could be less, but you're not going to get an SPF of 15 or an SPF of 30, so you should still wear sunscreen.
Dr. Michelle Hanjani is Assistant Professor of Clinical Dermatology with the Herbert Irving Center for Dermatology and Skin Cancer at Columbia University Medical Center. Thank you so much for being with us today. And is there any place listeners can go to find out more about this?
Listeners can go to the FDA website, and there's a press release that talks about the new regulations.
Thank you so much.